Hello, my name is Dave Hanrady and there will be no encore. Welcome to episode 31 of the No Encore Music Podcast. It's a packed house this evening. Craig Fitzpatrick is still here before he jets off on his holidays.
Anderson Pack, what's up? How are you?
That's an appropriate nickname
it
for
is.
Tonight's show.
They're kind of becoming quite appropriate, aren't they? I'm getting used to just like
you're doing better.
Slipping them in and making
you're maturing.
Teams.
You're maturing as you hit 31 years of age. He's not 31 years of age.
Not
you
very much 28.
You look disgusting.
So fuck you.
Well, you know.
Yeah, I turned 31 since the last time I did this podcast.
Oh, there we go. It's a good research. Age.
Yeah. That offended voice right there is Dean Van Nguyen, back again.
Hello.
And that man screaming into the microphone,
whooping incoherently,
making his No Encore debut is Richard Chambers.
Yes. No.
Okay.
Oh, just, off to an amazing start.
This is the best podcast of all time.
He just looked at me mischievously while opening a can of beer, which has leaked all over his notes. Wow. And the table.
What
and
an opening.
I need them to live.
Spilling on the floor as we speak.
This never happens in news talk, I
oh,
swear.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. This was
what
this
an never amateur. Happened to Pat Kenny ever.
This was clearly,
amateur error.
Clearly a mistake.
Should have got the hooky monster.
All right,
yeah, man. Richard is out.
Let's go without notes. We'll do it live.
I'll write it and we'll do it live. Richard's of News Talk vintage, but perhaps not for long if this level of unprofessionalism continues.
They're listening, yeah.
Don't tell work.
I hope to God not.
Yeah. Craig and Richard, opposite sides, but members of the same
company. You know what
company.
They say? Opposites sit on opposite sides.
Yeah. Well, Richard, you have been called a sensationalist quite recently on Twitter for some of your
and
reporting.
Yeah, a European Federalist, so I got it all now.
Do you enjoy being trolled by complete weirdos?
I enjoy trolling. I used to do this whole thing where you're not meant to feed the trolls. You're not meant to talk back to them. Now I just quote tweet them and just say, oh, really? Or just hit them
antagonize them, essentially.
And then all my friends will join in and gang up on them. It's a really noble way to settle your differences with people on the internet.
Fair play. Dean, you've also had a lot of people come after you for your opinions.
Oh yeah,
on the regular.
Cultural Marxist, got called that today.
Oh, that's amazing
nice.
One.
I'm
that's brilliant.
That.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm doing nothing with my life. Where's all the hate?
Twitter. Mate.
Had an amusing comment on an article I wrote about white privilege from a person who said, "Don't talk to me about my white privilege. You should see the car my granddad drove in the 1950s. He wasn't privileged."
It's a fair point.
Yeah. Oh, I feel that person may have missed the point of Dean's article,
slightly.
Which is up on the Irish Times at the moment. Prolific as always, you've also reviewed one of our albums of the week this week, which we'll get to.
Oh, thanks for noticing, because I only posted it up there
you go.
Before I left the house.
Look, nothing gets past me.
You're always online, watching.
Like,
lurking.
I'm like a modern day. I'm like a modern day Lou Bega, you might say.
Lou Bega, don't talk to me about Lou Bega, Dave.
Haven't heard that name in a long time.
This
it's got to be 5 minutes.
This wasn't rehearsed.
I was told this would be a Lou Bega podcast. It's the only reason.
Mambo number five sensation, Lou Bega.
Before we came on, we were talking about Lou Bega's second single, which the name. I'm not going to say it escapes me because I've never known it, but it does count off 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. To follow up his 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 from the first one. I just remember it was on, do you remember when Live and Kicking used to do Hit, Miss, or Maybe?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh,
fondly.
It was probably the only song I ever saw that got a miss.
But, oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yes. And one of them was Sonia from EastEnders, who gave it a thumbs down.
Your career's never going to recover
and,
from that.
And it didn't. Like that was the end of Lou Bega.
Sonia pulls no punches.
What's Lou Bega doing now?
Natalie Cassidy says no. Well then, that's it. I think that's her name. Back to my...
Impressive.
I used to watch soaps when I was younger. And
EastEnders.
Yeah, EastEnders Neighbours,
Street.
Home and Away.
Wow.
Never Coronation Street, though, or Emmerdale, or Brookside. I was going to call it Brooklyn, but it's Brookside.
So you hate the north of England, essentially.
I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
So, what did you do during the week, Craig? You're on holidays now.
I just got off yesterday, so I've done nothing.
Okay.
I had a nightmare last night that I stayed up and watched the Trump-Clinton debate, and then I realised I was awake, and it actually happened, and it was terrifying. So I'm just recovering today.
That sounds terrifying.
It was.
Like a lucid dream, sleep paralysis.
Yeah, very much so. But it was
actually last Thursday in the studio, we had Bantam, Rory Lynch, in.
Yes.
His album Move is out now. He's done a playlist on Head Stuff Music, actually, about the sounds that went into that one. And it's full of belters and bangers. I kind of got that wrong. It opens up with Block Rock and Beats by the Chemical Brothers, which I have to say really holds up. And you should go and check that out, as well as his new record. But he did reference last week that we were all off to see Death Grips. And by all off, it was me and him, because you went home.
Yeah, to bed, because I was up at like 5 o'clock
and
in the morning.
And didn't go to one of the most crazy gigs. In
yeah,
the-
yeah,
he skipped,
death
skipped
grips,
a freebie
yeah.
to Death Grips.
Free Death Grips.
Yeah, I missed out on Free Death Grips. It's just my life now. I haven't been
this
to a gig in an age.
Cool
I tried.
Ever.
I was like, come on. And you were like, no. But it was great. It was absolutely fantastic. It was completely
got to
crazy.
Hear it.
It was
life changing. It was
no support. In lieu of a support act, they just played drone music for about half an hour to an hour. Packed in the Academy, crazy crowd, but quite, you know, friendly at the same time. Like, lots of circle pits moving around as one, kind of like Venn diagram, starting up and stopping. It felt
Sounds like
one
homework.
Long song. MC Ride going crazy. Zach Hill on drums. I don't know how he does what he does. The sweat in the building was out of control.
That's what I don't like.
My ears were ringing. Yeah. It
almost feels like the walls are just.
It's a sweatbox, man.
Yeah, it's probably good. I didn't go like in a suit, and it just would have gotten bad.
And like we were on the balcony, and like, you know, heat rises.
Really?
It became misty, I'd say, up there.
Very misty. Like walking out into the street into the night rain. The night rain was.
What about there?
Was very enjoyable. So yeah, Death Grips, worth checking out live if you get the chance, Craig. I would recommend so. And I went to another gig.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, in the space of 1 week, I went to Nickelback, Death Grips, and then holy fuck.
Eclectic, if nothing else.
The Holy Trinity, as it's called.
They played in Whelan's. They were excellent. And I have to say, they were like Animal Collective. If Animal Collective enjoyed using rhythm in their songs, which they don't seem to do anymore.
And were good live.
And were good live, yeah.
Terrible live.
These were great live. It was a lot of fun. And as a man...
Whoa!
Bringing that heat.
Mean Van Winner.
Such casual heat as he flicks through his notes.
Oh, no, let's put on an Animal Collective album and have a ball.
Let's not. I saw them live once and it was horrible. I almost fell asleep standing up. Anyway, before Holy Fuck went on stage, actually like right before they went on stage, I had the chance to sit down and talk to Brian Borchard. Very difficult name to pronounce, but I think I got it right.
Sure did.
He's a very jovial fellow, and I actually interviewed him for Hot Press years ago, in which his first ever job was revealed, which was that of a clown. And as we all know, there's a bit of a clown epidemic going on at the moment, so...
Very zeitgeisty, yeah.
Yeah, well...
It's of the moment.
It is of the moment. And therefore, there was no better place to start, so I kicked off an interview by asking him about clowning and his general opinion on the state of things thereof, and you can listen to that now.
Yeah. I don't know if the professional might be overselling it, okay. But yeah, I was a clown.
And I mean, I'm sure you've been keeping an eye on the news at the moment. There's been an epidemic.
Oh, of these clowns
kind of milling around. So, as a former, maybe semi-professional clown, what do you think about your ancient craft being dragged into the dirt like this?
Oh, it's funny you say that because I do have one friend in the Facebook world, like an old acquaintance, a musician, who. Is also a children's entertainer, and he's a clown, and I always forget that about him. But he recently weighed in, and it was interesting to hear his take on it, because, yeah, sure enough, he was disappointed. He was like, you know, this is like an ancient craft. It's like it's had a place in our history, and, you know, and kids really love it, and, you know, let's not spoil it, and let's not give it this bad name. That said, I think I was always pretty scared of clowns, and... even when I did this job as a clown for about a week, and I was 16 probably, and I'd only just gotten my driver's license. It was like one of my very first like jobs outside of working for my parents, you know, cutting grass for my dad or something. And I don't think I was very good at it, first of all, but I also realized that not only was I scared of kids, you know, because I wasn't around a lot of little kids, but they were scared of clowns. They were scared of me.
It's a weird profession. Like it's a weird practice. And I mean, yeah, people are up in arms. Like, there's broadsheet articles about it now. There's one in The Guardian this week. And, like tracking down people who represent the fine art of clowning. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now there's people dressed up as Batman, apparently kicking the shit out of them on the streets.
Whoa, man, I gotta keep up with this. And maybe something good will come of it. Maybe we'll learn to sort of reclaim the ancient art and give it a better twist, because as long as I can remember, at least for our generation, we grew up with things like Stephen King's It.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
And,
yeah.
Which
they're remaking, by the way.
Oh, God. Yeah. And, you know, Insane Clown Posse and all that stuff. It's hard, you know, it's to a point now where we don't really see them the same as they would have like 50 years ago.
In that same interview, actually, that we had a few years ago, you did note that the first record you ever bought was by Neil Young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Heart of Gold's 7-inch, or the 45, I guess, yeah.
Which you learned to love.
Yeah, I learned to love. It's funny, yeah. Wow, you have a great memory.
No, I looked it up last night.
Yeah.
I still had it on my computer. But, I mean, what do you think about his contemporary Bob Dylan getting the Nobel Prize for Literature, the first musician to ever do so? Some people are up in arms about that as well.
Well, they are, yeah. And again, I like most people these days, I only really... you know, catch up on things based on what my friends are sharing on Facebook. And depending, like, you know, someone was weighing in about the clown thing because it was close to home. And then the people that have weighed in on this are writers, musicians, and usually the combination of writers and musicians. And some of my friends who are both actually find that they don't think it's right
for the most part, and that's interesting because they're sort of like underselling their own craft as writers and musicians. But, you know, it goes the other way too. I don't really have an opinion on it. I haven't really thought about it too much. It feels more like maybe Bob Dylan deserves some kind of Lifetime Achievement Award, but like a Nobel Prize for Literature. It feels like maybe there's someone more deserving that loses out. Whereas mm-hmm. I think Bob Dylan is already plenty celebrated, and he's already... And it really is more about a lifetime achievement. It's not about a one individual work. You know, what individual song can you really say is the song? You know, obviously Blowing in the Wind and songs like that that had impact on civil rights and historically speaking were well-timed and had a strong message. But in general, I think it's more of a lifetime, you know, career thing. And I don't know, maybe that's not the point of the Nobel Prize.
Well, it does set a precedent now for musicians mm-hmm. to be recognized. And as a matter of fact, this time last Sunday, mm-hmm. I was at a fellow Canadian band.
Mm-hmm.
I saw, for my sins, I saw Nickelback live.
That is for your sins. Well, how was that?
Well, as I confessed to my friends and on the podcast, once I had enough beers,
it
was a lot of fun.
I bet you if I went to a wedding and they played, I would love it. It'd be like the funnest wedding. But I don't know. I don't think I'd go out of my way for it.
You've never had the pleasure then, no?
No.
Well, it's weird because like, Canada is a very diverse kind of musical nation. Mm-hmm. My friend moved over there recently. He moved over to Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And he's there about 2 years and kind of feels like he's been there for longer because he started dropping phrases like the six.
Yeah, everyone's calling it the six. I want to bring T.O. back or T.Dot.
Was that a thing?
It was for a while, yeah. T.O., I mean, obviously, that always happens. But T.Dot specifically was like the Toronto hip-hop. We had a scene that, you know, before Drake, and, you know, it wasn't nearly as big, but they were repping it as T.Dot. And so that kind of stuck for a while. Hey, but now it's the six. Cool. Good for your friend. Yeah, he's part of the club now.
Big Drake fan as well.
Yeah. Drake's pretty good.
Drake's blowing up. But you've moved. You've moved mm-hmm. from Toronto to New York City.
I'm actually in, New York State. Well, my wife had been working in New York City, and I was in Toronto, and that was pretty, you know, I'd rather be closer to her, and I was mostly sticking around Toronto so I could finish the record, and she was working in New York City. So I moved to rural New York about 2.5 hours north of New York City, and I'm loving it because I'm in the woods.
Oh, that sounds cool.
It's actually an area I've always wanted to move, and I actually sort of put those plans on hiatus when I met my wife, because my wife is Canadian, and I'm dual citizen, so, you know, I have American parents. So I always kind of wanted to move to this area, and then I kind of put those ambitions on hold when the two of us met, and ironically, she ended up getting full-time work in New York City. So it's sort of, it kind of brought that dream alive again, you know, brought it back to life.
It's an interesting time to move into the States, of course. You know, do you have an election fever?
Yeah, I guess I have an election flu. I'm not trying to avoid it. That's not at all the case. You know, I don't try to avoid anything that's really important and that's happening in the world, but I try not to inundate myself with it.
Yeah.
You know, you can, every day you can follow some dumb thing that Donald Trump is doing. You can really get wrapped up and all the like point by point, but at the end of the day, I'm just gonna kind of hide under a pile of blankets or something and hope it all goes well.
It's kind of interesting that we sit here like moments before you go on stage. Mm-hmm. Like it's, you know, it's quite rock and roll in its own way.
It's so peaceful back here. My bandmates aren't even here right now.
It's very, very peaceful. I mean, like has an awful lot changed for the band, because obviously, you know, in the kind of intervening years, some children have popped up here mm-hmm. and there, and like I think you've had to make more considerations about even touring schedules and stuff. So mm-hmm. how are you finding it now?
I mean, that's all very true. Right now is like the final European date on this tour. We go back to Canada, we play one more show, and then we disperse, everyone going in a different direction. So it's sort of the second to the last show in a month of shows, and it's been a lot of fun, and it feels like the way it's always been. And in fact, I think we're playing better than ever. That much I think is true. It's you know, I'd have to get in a time machine and go back and see and compare it, but I just feel like this band always evolves and we're always getting better and better, and so it's really exciting now to be out here doing it. But I also understand for my bandmates that do have kids, and I don't, but I understand that that commitment could be a good thing for us because it'll make us a little bit smarter mm-hmm. about how we tour. One of the reasons why we took a chunk of time off and a little bit more than the average band would take off is because we kind of needed it for our own sanity because we went a little too strong. Like, I don't want to say we went too hard. It sounds like we're just party animals, but no, we just went too full on. Like, we didn't give ourselves breaks. So we were sort of touring without strategy, and we're always on stage and always traveling, and it got to the point where we just really burned out and we needed to take time. So I think that having kids and having these other commitments, it might just make us smarter. It might allow more time for us to write material. It might allow more time to record albums and you know, do other aspects of what it is to be in a band these days, like, you know, make videos or whatever it is. You know, there's so much of the creative process other than just playing live. Yeah. And that's really what we did and what we focused on for years, was just playing live. And it was fun. That's the thing about playing live. You can kind of ignore everything else going on in the world and just focus on your commitment that you have every night. And it's very rewarding.
So, like, with all that said, for fans it might have felt like a long wait between mm-hmm. records, but for you guys, maybe not. Like, 6 years on paper looks like a lot, but I guess, you know, maybe not.
It didn't feel... it started to feel stressful. Like, there would be moments where I couldn't sleep at night just because it all catches up to you. You know, you kind of, like, suddenly you're there and you're thinking about time and how time flies and you start... You know, because honestly, the record was almost done in 2013. Like, we kind of did rough mixes of about half the material in 13, and we really could have tightened the whole thing up and finished it by the end of the year. But we also realized that in addition to... You know, having that time that we took up to 2013 when we were ready, we needed to sort of restructure some of the business sides of the band too. You know, we wanted to sort of look for new management. I mean, this stuff isn't all that interesting for fans out there, but it's part of it. And we're living in an era now where, like, you do have to wait 8 months before you put out a record from the moment it's done, just to press the vinyl and just to get your press people on board. It's kind of anticlimactic when you finish this record and you're so excited about it, and then you're like, okay, get in the queue, it's gonna take you, you know, 6 months at least to get this pressed. So that's really where that time went. So it didn't feel like it was so long because we were almost ready in 13, we were pretty much done in 14, and got a label involved, got management involved, and then just got in the queue, and then it ended up coming out in May of 2016. And it's god, it was stressful.
So yeah, come out in May, and mm-hmm. obviously you've been busy touring. Have you had much time to even go back to it, just listen to it as a casual listen, or do you do that at all?
I listen to it far too much when I'm working on it.
Sure.
And there's always some aspect of the creative process that involves me, like, over and analyzing, and I try to reduce that. You know, I do a lot of the sort of, like, final production. You know, I don't do all of it. It's a group effort, but there's a lot of it that I take on, and largely because I enjoy it. And, you know, I have a studio in my basement, and we make, like, twice as many songs as that end up on the record, so that sort of slows down the process, you know, trying to finish 20 songs to pick your favorite 10, you know. And so during that process, I'm analyzing it. Maybe, like, when it's almost done, I'll smoke a joint and listen to it again, you know. I'm not a big smoker, but I find it...
You've said it now, man.
I tend to, you know, enjoy a casual drink more often than I smoke anything, but I think it's an interesting tool in the creative process. It allows you a certain perspective. So I listen to it and I hear things differently, and I make new judgments based on being, you know, in a maybe more different mindset. And Jesus, and then you got to figure out how to sequence the record. So now I'm walking around Toronto with it in my headphones, like, picking different sequences. There's a million different ways it could go, and I've by the time it's done, I don't ever want to listen to it again. I will probably hear it like 6 years from now and really enjoy it, but I definitely overdone it in the last.
That's a hell of a commitment. And I mean, this record, like, I mean, like, they say kind of, you know, it's a cliche, but people say that restraint is one of the hardest things a musician can learn. Mm-hmm. But you guys seem to really try and put as much limitations on yourselves as possible, even down to, like, what you were using to make this record. So
and especially what we're using. Like,
did that come back to bite you, or was that?
No, I think I prefer doing it this way. Like, I've been kind of observing how some of my friends make their art, whether it's like making, you know, film or videos, visual arts or painting or whatever. You know, a lot of people
it's in the final stages, they try to obscure it somehow. Like, they'll make a beautiful video, but then put it through a weird effect. Or they'll make it kind of edgy. Or it seems at some point that often happens on the tail end. And I love that we do it on the front end. Like, we start with something that's so hard to even make musical. Like, it's... I mean, the drums and bass player, they're great, so that's already musical, it's already catchy, the great rhythm, but really, for Graham and I, we're really taking kind of like these strange drones and sounds and objects, and we're trying to make them as musical as we can, so that by the time we've captured it, now we actually try to present it in the best light. So we almost go the opposite. Now we really want people to love it. We want to sell it to the world. We want, you know, sell people on it. I mean, not like financially, but yeah, you really want to wow people with it. And I really enjoy that part of the process, as opposed to doing it the opposite, starting with a pop song and then smearing it through weird plugins or something.
Yeah. But I mean, in that regard, like, Critical Notice has actually been very, very good on this one. Like you seem to get a lot of really, really good reviews. Like, do you pay attention to press clippings at all? Like, does that matter?
It doesn't. I would rather they don't affect the outcome. Sure. I'd rather not be changed by them. I've always believed that it's good to have a good peer group of trusted allies, and those friends and, you know, other bands, people that care about you and want to see you succeed. They're gonna give you good advice, because they want to see you succeed. So, like, you know, bands like Mets are good friends of mine, and so when they're working on their record, they'll play me their stuff before it's done. And I want to tell them the truth. I want to be like, I think this song should start the record, and I'm not sure about this song. You know, and it's an opinion, you know, I hope they value it, but when it's my turn, and when I have these friends telling me what they think, I really, really value it, because I know that their only vested interest is to see us do well, and they want people to see us as they see us. Critics aren't necessarily the same thing, you know? They're always coming from some skewed perspective, and, you know, you get good criticism, you know, you get good reviews, and that can kind of, you know, feed into your ego, and then maybe you get some stuff that's pretty scathing, and it challenges all the ideas you had, and then you'll be tempted to change them, and especially for a band like Holy Fuck, because we've kind of done a lot of things wrong. You know, the band name aside, it's like, you know, how we make music. We were never pandering to anyone. We were very obstinate about how we were going to make music. And then even when we got signed to XL and got put into a sphere with other pop artists and stuff, you know, I know there was expectations for us to sort of become a little bit more of like this, like, dance music producer combo, and we just didn't want to do it, and we stayed this noisy experimental band at the cost of even people liking it. You know, I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna do it the way we do it, and because I think there's a value in it. And so, sure enough, when those bad reviews come out, that's the first thing they attack. Like, they kind of hit you at all those weak points.
Sure.
They will just basically expose the obvious and say, this isn't very melodic. Or they'll just say, I don't get it. It's not going to, you know, whatever. And if you took that to heart, you would change everything that makes, you know, people drawn to what you do.
I feel really good about the negative Kings of Leon review that I filed earlier on today.
Oh, right? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no. I was fair. Very fair. And I didn't go college level, I'm angry snark. I did my very best, but I'm sure, you know, every to them might even apply. So yeah, the XL thing, I mean, like, you were never asked to remix Adele or anything then?
No, I mean, there were certain opportunities, but, like, that is exactly it. Like, I mean, again, like, we start from a compromised position in how we make our art and how we make our music, but we're a little naive. We think we can do everything, you know? So part of us probably thought we were going to start writing for Adele. You know, why not? Mm-hmm. But it didn't happen. So, and it's not to say it won't happen still, but I really think that if you... we just have to stick to what we do, and like I said, I think it keeps getting better, whatever that means. You know, it's just we understand it better than ever, what we're trying to do, and I think we're able to explain it better than ever in the form of the song or the music or the album. I think it the point is coming across better than ever, and, you know, at some point, hopefully people kind of get behind it and allow us to be ourselves and still have doors open for us.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely feel the ceiling.
Yeah. Well, I guess, I mean, lastly, like, before we wrap up and let you take the stage, is there any truth to the rumor that you're going to work on a Christmas record?
Oh, the rumor has started. Jesus, now we have to. You know, I bet you it could come out in the form of, like, a couple songs or something. I don't know if we'd have to put out a whole thing. Maybe it'd end up being one experiment. It's definitely something we've talked about from the very beginning.
Are we talking covers here, or...?
You'll have to wait and see.
Okay, right. Fair enough. Okay, listen, Brian, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
So it's Brian from Holy Fuck there, a nice guy. I think you guys can all agree.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, that 18-minute interlude there, my notes have not dried up at all. Still smelling like the finest of Brooklyn Brewery there. You know?
Yeah, a good guy, a great band, and a great night out.
Good. So I'm glad. I'm happy for you.
Okay, we can now move into what's happening in the world of this week. Actually, correction corner, because in the last episode we talked about Leonard Cohen, whose new album You Want It Darker is out now. And he had said, you know, I'm ready to die, it's all over. But at a kind of a Q&A/playback session for his latest record, the host was like, how are you feeling? Probably a question he was wanting to ask him.
Like, are you okay?
While the entire album was playing. And Leonard Cohen backtracked. He made us look like fools and said that he, you know, he said, I was exaggerating. You know, I've always been into self-dramatization. I intend to live forever.
Yeah, he intends to stick around until 120.
Jokes on you, planet Earth.
Yeah, he does very much seem like the kind of guy that could just decide, all right, now 120, I'm going to go for
it. Like, why not?
Yeah, he seems
so,
like
that
so
kind
of
dude. So his definition
of
forever is 120. You'd take that, though, wouldn't you? It's a pretty good innings.
That is a very good innings. Obviously, great news to hear. It's not like he was taken really out of context, though. And it was a really kind of long, good interview with the New Yorker, wasn't it? And he kind of spent a lot of time talking about his health, and there was references to the fact, as he was being interviewed, that he was at home, he couldn't really get out a lot, he was struggling even to kind of play music, so he has been going through, you know, quite a tough time, but it sounds like he's in better health, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he also made a comment about Bob Dylan, which I can't quite work out. Is it dig or approval?
No, it's a very much approval.
That's approval.
Yeah, he's, Bob Dylan, of course, won the Nobel Prize in Literature, and Cohen said it's like pinning a medal on Mount Everest for being the highest mountain. So I guess he's saying, like, it's stating the obvious, as in, like, you know.
Pretty much, yeah. It means nothing because he's so above it all that, you know.
Well, he hasn't returned any of the calls.
No, he hasn't.
Nobel.
He hasn't. I mean, he's not going to show up.
No.
It is very typical.
Never turns any of my calls.
Barack Obama actually
hit him on the WhatsApp as well.
Yeah.
Barack Obama told an anecdote about Bob Dylan about how, like, he performed for him and, you know, didn't show up to press the flesh or take photos like everyone else has done, and he didn't even interact with him during the sound check, just kind of did his job during the performance. He kind of leaned over to him, gave him a big smile, shook his hand, and then disappeared into the night. And Obama was like, that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
There's
that's what you want, him
well.
What you want from Bob Dylan.
Yeah. There was some place recently he got one of those honorary doctorate degree things, and, like, you know, the way you have that big elaborate, you know, gown and hat thing, and he's the only person who was actually allowed to keep it. He actually asked, all right, I want to keep that. I think it was from Oxford.
Well, yeah.
I wonder what he does with it. Does he just have it mounted on the wall like Batman's costume or
probably,
something?
Probably, yeah, yeah. And if there's a crime, he just pops in that thing and, yeah, down to his underground cave and off he goes.
I have a question for Richard. Are we allowed?
Oh, let's go.
Here
we go, Oscar. Let's text in now.
You were recently at the UKIP convention.
Yes. Party conference.
Yeah.
It was the lols.
What was the music there like, and what songs would you consider to be in the UKIP canon? I see very, you know, white men with beard rock music.
It was like most party conventions or conferences, they'll have like canned CD music over Tannoy. The tunes UKIP had were Chasing Cars by Snow Patrol. There was Kate Nash's Foundations, which I quite enjoyed. What else do they have? Oh,
did you actually?
I think that's a great song.
Oh, for God's sake.
And it was actually very appropriate for what that party's become, because.
Yeah.
Know,
yeah,
there's serious cracks in those foundations.
They're
punching each other out, you know.
1975.
The band of the moment as well.
You're so topical.
This is UKIP have their fingers on the, you know, the pulse of pop culture. Nigel Farage himself, I heard, picked that playlist of doom.
Jesus Christ. Oh, that sounds like an absolute horror show.
I was also told to fuck off and die shortly after I entered the place. So it's all a very positive experience, yeah.
Christ. Well, I don't know how to swing into the next segment of news. What I'll do is, I'm terrified. I'm about to open the same can of beer as Richard, which he's kindly donated to me. So I've, here we go. Let's hope it doesn't explode like yours did.
There you go. Look at that.
It's grand.
It's all about the real sound effects. That's actuality. It's what we call that in the biz.
Goal. I just raised the can.
Nice work.
So, yeah, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominations are out. Some people are absolutely outraged. Others don't care because
every single year this happens.
Does it mean anything? I mean, but yeah, list 2017 nominations are out. Pearl Jam and Tupac Shakur have been nominated in their first year of eligibility because their first recordings came out in 1991. The entire list, lots of names
it's
here.
It's actually a really, really good class.
It's quite a good class. Let's read it out. Sure, why not? Bad Brains, yeah. The Cars, Chaka Khan, Chic at the 11th time of asking.
Unbelievable. they're just taking the piss.
Rogers is just
come on, 11th time's a charm.
Maybe if I gig Ireland again.
Depeche Mode, Electric Light Orchestra, Craig's favourites.
Yeah, they've got some tunes.
The Jay Can't Gales deny. Band, I'm not familiar. Jane's Addiction.
Oh, great band.
Which I still think is probably the best band name ever.
Yeah.
It's very good.
It's a good band.
It's a good name.
Great band, though. Yeah.
Janet Jackson.
Yes.
Particularly appropriate if Janet gets in this year, given she's was very memed last night during the presidential debate when Donald Trump called Hillary Clinton a nasty woman.
Yeah, yeah. Streams of nasty through the roof.
Miss Clinton, it's also Miss Clinton jam. If you're nasty.
We also have Joan Baez. We have Joe Tex. No. We have Journey. Who, you know, everyone's favourite bar band, thanks to The Sopranos.
They'll eventually get in, like Journey. Just
I think they'll get in first time.
I think they're getting in.
It's a very rock and roll Hall of Fame type of band, isn't it?
Massively so. Kraftwerk,
how
which
are they
is
not
strange.
In? That's like, you're talking about basically the canon there.
We also have MC5. We mentioned like Pearl Jam, first time of asking. Steppenwolf, Tupac Shakur, Yes, and The Zombies. Heavyweight names.
I think, how many normally go in? In each class, like two or three, is it?
It's about five-ish. Yeah, I think, yeah, there's believe, a good yeah. good amount. I'll make a night of it. It's like
that.
The UK party conference.
It's the UK party conference of American rock
Very
music.
Much so.
I'm going to tell you, Yes is going to get in.
Yes are getting in, for sure.
Tupac is going to get in, because they've gone very hip-hop friendly.
Public Enemy were entered, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. NWA. NWA are in there.
Pearl Jam are getting in.
Jam are getting
in. Pearl Jam are
getting in. And ooh.
Chic.
You know what? I think
she can get in.
I might go Jane's Addiction on that.
I think Jane's Addiction is a good shout.
An edgier shout.
There was on Pitchfork a member of the, I'm not sure if present or previous member of the voting committee, went through all of these and was very candid, actually. It was a really good read. Like, Bad Brains were first up and this guy was like, no. He's like, no chance, not happening. Said, like, Chic, he goes, you know, again, 11th time of asking, forget about it. ELO will be popular. He reckons, I think he said, like, Journey will get in and Yes will get in, unfortunately. Fan voting will probably get bands like that in as well. Reckons Jane's Addiction are a good shout. Pearl Jam are an absolute lock. Tupac should get in. Doesn't see it for Janet Jackson, though.
It's kind of like the BBC Sportsman of the Year award.
Sportsman of the Year, yeah.
Who cares? No one sets out tuning the guitar.
I'm
going to
get into
dreaming
of
being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame one day.
Cheap Trick were inducted by Kid Rock last year, right? Let's move on.
It's our classic lives. Rock Hall of Fame, isn't it?
Well, this has been the debate
this is why the arguments start up, because people go, you can't have a black man who doesn't play guitar in my Hall of Fame.
Boo.
Yeah,
like,
I think
it's like the Glastonbury argument all over again.
Oh Christ, yeah, same thing every year.
NWA went in last year, and I believe at the time Gene Simmons was very much just like, it's not the hip hop Hall of Fame.
That's what he said, yeah.
Good man, and Gene. I think Ice Cube was quite
Fuck
good
Gene
about
Simmons.
Kind of saying, you know, what a lovely blow. Gosh, really?
Oh, Gene.
But I think Ice Cube was quite good about saying, you know, rock and roll is, you know, it's about a certain spirit, it's about nonconformity. Then you have to think, what has that got to do with a Hall of Fame? So it's such a weird kind of concept. I mean, you could make the same argument that Kraftwerk aren't rock and roll. Like, they've no real basis in the blues, or it's a very European thing, it's not rock and roll, so.
Are Status Quo in there?
I just saw the Smiths aren't in there.
The Smiths and Nine Inch Nails have been nominated for the last 2 years.
And
not this
time. It's a very particular type of act which normally gets in there.
Yeah.
That's why it'll be Yes and Steppenwolf. And
well, it'll be broadcast on the Home Box Office Network at some point. So, you know, enjoy that. Yeah,
tits and swords.
Lots of dragons and tits. I find that...
And very overly produced opening theme songs.
Oh, God. Yeah. Is
I don't know if you've seen the new
Westworld.
Like,
yes.
I haven't seen it. All the other ones like, oh, high priced. Like,
I like Westworld.
Do you like Westworld?
I like Westworld. I have two episodes of Westworld. And
I'm three episodes in. And
I'm liking the little piano covers of like...
No, that's terrible.
I think it's great.
That's awful. Have you watched Westworld?
I have no idea what it is. Westworld. I assume it's like the West Wing, except now Martin Sheen's like president of the world.
And he's a robot.
No. He's a robot. It's cyborg.
It's about robots and humans and, you know, are robots
have you
like
seen the
humans?
Movie?
No, I haven't.
Movie's great.
Yul Brynner.
It's classic.
I know nothing of this.
Have you not heard the Stephen Malkmus song that was about the movie?
No.
I have not, no.
JoJo's Jacket.
You're being exposed here, man.
For God's sake.
Not able to hang.
Not even, Jesus.
Westworld, yeah, so far not great. Lost to Anthony Hopkins chewing scenery and giving bad dialogue. James Marsden.
That's what I like. That's James, my comfort.
James Marsden as the modern day South Park version of Kenny getting killed in every episode.
Yeah, that, I suppose.
I don't know.
I kind of liked it, though. I think I have to watch the third episode.
It feels very lost to me so far, which is not a good sign.
Yeah.
Not a good sign.
Making it up as we go along.
Jonathan Nolan is based on. He's up his own arse, so, you know. But, yeah, in tangential relation to the Hall of Fame, though, Chuck Berry is back.
The creator of rock and roll, some would say.
Who turned 90 years of age.
Fly, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, of course.
90 years of age. We know the truth. Announced that he's going to release a new album, his first in 38 years, next year.
Yeah, Chuck, which that's I guess is an homage to Sum 41's 2004 record.
Hey, that
same
had,
name.
That had one good song on
did it.
Did it? Yeah, it's
didn't
called
hear
Pieces.
It.
Oh, okay. It's quite life-affirming.
Yeah, it's quite the comeback, though, isn't it, after so many years away? And dedicated to his wife of 60 years, so...
68 years.
68 years.
Don't take away those 8 years from them, Greg.
Jesus Christ.
You don't know what
happened. He's one of those people you just think is dead.
Yeah, if you Google Chuck Berry, it comes up, how did Chuck Berry die?
It is that thing terrible. That he was at the very start of rock and roll, yeah. And so many people in rock and roll have now died, that it's just like, no, he's still been going the whole time.
Yeah, it's kind of Chuck is amazing. You know, one of the kind of fathers, I thought... You know, B.B. King, you kind of thought when he died, maybe that's it for that generation. Unless Little Richard, he's still going. Unless he comes back or something. I don't know.
Is he alive?
Little Richard, yeah.
Oh, man, he is still going.
Evergreen.
My God.
Evergreen.
Look up some of his
This is all massive up yours to Elvis Presley. Screw you, screw you. Screw you, guys.
Yeah, you took everything from us. Yeah. So you forever.
How many years
keep your
Elvis
Cadillac.
Gone, huh?
Yeah.
We're still here, mate.
We're still here.
Seriously,
doing that thing you stole from us.
90 years of age.
That's
90.
Unbelievable.
Now, I was checking out some YouTube stuff of his, like, he's still gigging. Or he was up until 2 years ago, and it doesn't make for a great watching, to be
well,
honest.
Well, he's 90 years old.
I know.
What are you doing?
He really shouldn't be touring. Because I was just curious. I mean, if he's releasing an album, I didn't realise he was still playing as well. And it's just...
Main stage of Longitude 2017.
Yeah, like he was in his late 80s, and it's just not happening anymore. So I don't know what this album's going to sound
people
like.
Their minds.
Come on, Chuck!
So yeah, but yeah, played with his long time backing man, which includes his children. You know, it's I assume there's been a lot of heavy lifting here, and I you know, but it seems that
hopefully not on Chuck's part because his hip might just go.
Oh.
Well, you know, he's got a good quote from this. He says, "My darling, I'm grown old. I've worked on this record for a long time, and now I can hang up my shoes." Fair play.
Nice that.
Yeah. Making Leonard Cohen.
That's interesting. Is it going to be an old load of old recordings?
This is the thing,
Has he gone in? Did he go into the studio over the
summer?
Lots
of originals, apparently, yeah. Like apparently originals are the leading. More details to come in the next few weeks, which is a weird way to sign off the press release, but that's what it said. But they did stress that we will have original material. So I look forward to Pitchfork eviscerating a 90-year-old man.
A dirty, dirty old man, though. Let's not forget. You don't know about Chuck Berry's...
No.
Oh yeah, he owned a restaurant.
Do we need to get the bleep ready for this?
No, this is proven. He had to make settlements
this
and stuff.
This is the whole fact.
He opened a restaurant and he installed cameras in the female toilets, including under the lid of the toilet, and then he paid them all off. This was years ago. He was in his probably 60s at this stage. I'm sure he's a reformed character. But
so
yes.
Is this a concept album about that?
Yeah, probably. I hope so.
Chuck.
What I learned.
If I did it. like, I don't know. I hope it's good.
He's in the Hall of Fame. Something only. Let me just go back in my notes.
Richard will go through his notes if he could, but they're ruined.
Bad brains can only dream of.
Yeah, yeah.
Take that bad brains. For liquid, yeah.
Well, you know, in terms of albums, arguably the album of the year, and I feel like people at this table would maybe agree,
yeah.
Frank Ocean's Blonde and Endless, you know, I don't know if you put them together, I kind of do, some people don't, but both are ineligible for the Grammys, and even a much less relevant award show, if you ask me. You know, I can't wait to see who wins Best Folk and Roots Christian Album. They have like 75
spoken word,
best soundtrack packaging, I think is another one. Like it's
really?
Okay. Oh man.
They just go into the minutiae.
There's about 75 or 78 awards in the Grammys. But yeah, Blonde and Endless will not be getting any Grammy love this time next year. And apparently, yeah, they didn't make the eligibility cutoff date. But apparently, a source close to Frank Ocean says that they deliberately didn't bother.
Why?
That has not been revealed.
It's interesting.
We can only speculate.
Complete opposite of what Chance the Rapper is doing. Because Chance, obviously...
Well, Chance is courting mainstream.
He's taking out massive ads
fame.
And yeah.
But yeah, no, it's different. I mean, because what was the whole thing about, like, he's releasing, like, music for free and apparently you have to commercially sell it to qualify for Grammys, I suppose.
See, Frank will always have this up on Chance now.
Yeah.
What Chance is like, didn't care. Yeah.
Frank actually turned up. There was a state dinner in the White House yesterday.
Yep, he wore checkerboard Vans on the same day that I was wearing checkerboard Vans.
Wow, did you feel a connection?
I felt validated and a connection and a better human being. Chance the Rapper was also there. They both brought their parents, which was very sweet and touching.
You kind of would have to, wouldn't you? If you gone to the White House Chance and you're American, you know.
I was disappointed to see Chance ditch the baseball cap, though.
Really?
He didn't wear a baseball cap. He sans hat.
Sold out.
Maybe that works for Obama.
Is that
like,
right?
In the White House. Like, right. He's some sort of economic advisor.
He pilot some drones or anything? No, is that?
I don't know, yeah.
Keep Guantanamo Bay open?
I think like little gospel interludes. And
possibly. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, we can only speculate why Frank was doing this. But I like it. It adds to the mystery, you know? The whole
thing. Yeah, fair play to him. Yeah. Fuck the Grammys.
Grammys are shit.
Yeah.
He win awards for that woodworking anyway, though. He's
got... And now, the week in Bust Ups by Craig Fitzpatrick.
So Azealia Banks, she hasn't been up so much lately, has she?
No.
Well, apparently she was at a party. It was a party thrown by Russell Crowe, and she wasn't too into the music that was being played.
I need to know what music was being played. This is the problem. This is the detail that we don't have.
I mean, it might have been Russell Crowe's own music, because he was in that dreadful kind of Australian pub rock.
30-odd foot of grunts.
Of grunts, yeah. And if the name alone doesn't do it for you.
Music will.
Music certainly will. Right up there with Jimmy Nail and Steven Seagal in terms of the kind of, yeah, blues.
Don't have a go at Steven.
Really? Have you heard his music?
Yeah.
Is it?
It's
is
horrendous. Yeah. He's a terrible human being.
Yeah, so the only reason Azealia Banks was at this party was because RZA brought her along for some... Why would... He's such a mischief maker.
Well, RZA, she signed up to... she's either on his management label or his new record label or something. They have a connection there. But RZA and Russell Crowe starred memorably in the film The Man with the Iron Fists or something.
Memorably. Yes. Very memorably. Oh,
yeah, RZA directed that. Yeah. But they also co-starred in American Gangster.
Oh, they did.
Of course.
Yeah, they did. RZA was in that, yeah. RZA's actually a pretty good screen presence. And I kind of wish he'd do more stuff like that. And I believe Dave Bautista was also in The Man with the Iron Fist. Mm. Not a good movie.
Good soundtrack.
Good soundtrack. Russell Crowe's character was called Jack Knife. That's pretty good, right? Yeah.
Clever, yeah.
I like that one. Can we get an air horn for Russell Crowe's character there? Thank you.
It's so sad when you can't actually hear anything. We're all just sitting
here.
Don't
reveal the magic, Craig.
I'm sorry.
The post-production.
But anyway, okay, Azealia wasn't digging the music. She called Crow and others there boring white men. And allegedly, now we're getting into very TMZ territory here because, you know, we don't really know what went on. But she had a glass and she threatened Crow and some woman she was talking to, saying, "You would love it if I broke my glass, stabbed you guys in the throat." And at that point, when she grabbed the glass, Crow restrained her and took her out of the hotel suite, and she was kind of kicked out.
Now, I'm no medical expert, but I don't think anybody would love having a broken glass rammed into their throat.
No.
What's the story with Azealia Banks?
I think she was off base. She then took to Facebook and essentially said, "No, actually, I was kind of being..."
She says she has receipts. Do you know what receipts mean, Craig, in modern parlance?
No, receipts? Evidence.
Okay, she's got video evidence.
Evidence. Yeah. Somebody it's like that word ghosting when someone's ignoring you. We can't use the word ignoring anymore. We have to use ghosting.
So, well, she says she's going to speak out about the incident once she's had time to process the brutality and abuse she was unjustly subjected to.
Yeah, which I believe she has done in a 2-page spread in The Sun, which I didn't read because it's The Sun. Russell Crowe was on The Late Late Show doing some music about a couple of years ago. And it was Late Late Show, so it was ramshackle as all hell. And you could tell it wasn't even rehearsed. Ryan Tuberty was kind of like, "Would you play a song?" And Russell Crowe surprisingly said yes. So they got out the acoustic guitar. He has to tune it. Like, I mean, this is all live TV. Ooh. He has to go up to the balcony where the band were playing. And the whole thing was like, he's almost tripping over things on the way up. And it's, you know, it's like, it's kind of charming in a weird roundabout way.
Who else was on that show? Because I remember watching it and he kind of saved it because there was some really awkward interview with someone.
I don't recall
directly
beforehand. But it was a natural kind of weird fun moment that, you know, again, RTE kind of didn't quite understand what they had in the moment. But there was an amazing bit where Russell Crowe starts playing this song and the crowd do what all Irish crowds do and they start clapping along.
Shit. Yeah.
And Russell Crowe stops the song and goes, "No, no." And he goes, "You bastards aren't clapping along because you're out of time and you're going to put me off." And the crowd then just like stunned silence, shut up, and Russell Crowe played his song.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. You know what? Fair fucking play. There's nothing worse than like everyone turning into the fucking Lumineers at a gig and doing it terribly out of
time. It's the Late Late Show, though. You're going to start awkwardly clapping.
There's a strange compatibility about it, though, isn't there? Like, it's like you want to show support and you want to get into it, but that's just like, really poor. Justin Bieber did that at some gig there like a couple of months ago.
Oh, yeah?
He literally stopped in the middle of "What Do You Mean?" because they're all clapping along to it. And he's like, "No, no, now do this." And he, like,
Oh, showed them how to do it?
Yeah, okay. Timed it out for them, which was nice.
He said some weird stuff at his gigs lately. Like, he had a gig in the UK there, and he said something like to the top row of the balcony. He said, like, when Jesus comes, you're going to be the first to go.
He hates his fans so much.
The contempt,
like,
for
I'm
his
surprised
own fan
he hasn't
base.
Taken down his trousers and just pissed all over them from the stage at this point. Like, we're not that far away from that happening.
I was watching Atlanta.
I was about to say, this is the best, like, fictional representation of Justin Bieber of all time. It's the program that's made by Donald Glover, of course, Childish Gambino. But they have, like, it's got huge critical acclaim already. It's amazing. It's mostly comedy, but it's also just absurdist and it's sketch, and it's also, you know, taps into the, you know, a lot of, like, it's kind of part drama as well. So many different genres bashed into one, but they have one episode in which there's a black Justin Bieber. He turns up at this charity basketball game and just
that's
behaves.
Not, he's like Justin Bieber, except he's black. His name is Justin Bieber. And in this universe, apparently this is Justin Bieber. Yeah.
It is phenomenal. It's incredible.
I think that's why Frank Ocean didn't enter the Grammys this year. Just Paperboy. All over.
Yeah. Any other bust-ups, Craig, to report?
No, not this week. And there's no Craig on Kanye, so deal with it, people.
Jesus Christ.
Sorry, yeah.
The grimmest
I'm on
man.
On my holidays. You're looking at me here.
The grimmest man. Grimmest man in the room. You want to talk about Kanye West?
What did he do? Oh, yeah.
Richard Chambers on Kanye.
He's back touring again. He's extended the life of Pablo Tour. And
this is all ad-libbed.
Yeah, no, actually, what he
no
did was, do you know what? Actually, he did at his gig last night. I think it was. I don't know where it was. Somewhere in Canada. That's how precise I am. He was talking about that Drake track, Pop Style, which was on, of course, Drake's awful Views album.
Terrible album,
but
dreadful.
Remember
album.
When the single came out? It had Jay-Z and Kanye on it as the throne, and Jay-Z had like two bars in it. Not even it was that bar. It was that bar, and it then disappeared from the album version, as did Kanye's thing. Kanye West says that's down to Apple Music and Tidal and their conflict over, you know, who does what. And apparently Jay-Z didn't even want to do the one bar because out of solidarity for Meek Mill. And you got to respect that about the man.
Jesus Christ.
That's an amazing story.
It is unbelievable.
It's a terrible
thing. Jay-Z is like, I'll give you two lines.
Oh my God.
I heard Meek Mill close his Instagram account.
Do it, Meek Mill. Meek Mill is the saddest man in hip hop. I just feel endlessly sorry for Meek Mill. Getting killed by Joe Budden.
Quick around the table. Who's going to Drake when he comes over here?
I would have been, but I didn't get a ticket.
What date is that?
Is he not doing two nights now?
He is, yeah.
Is he?
Are they both sold out?
I don't think they're both sold out. The first one's definitely sold out.
To the princely sum of about 85 or 90 euro. Yeah.
I
saw him play
bothered.
The Three Arena last time he was over.
Oh, with the weekend supporting?
Yeah.
How was he?
Oh, yeah, he was great. Yeah, he was great.
That's going to be a great gig, though.
Yeah.
But
I tell you, we'll be. I mean, I don't like Drake, but I'd like to go for the spectacle.
Mm. Yeah, he did this thing. He had this kind of like, I don't know what you call it, like a runway, almost like a circular runway that came off the ceiling, and he got on it and it lifted him up so he could go and, you know, talk to people on the upper balcony.
That sounds awesome.
It was a good show. And of course, like because the weekend had opened, he came out and they did Crew Love and I think in a couple of tunes together.
That's quality.
Did he live for?
Did he do that one? I'm not sure.
Oh, wow. I'm jealous.
It was around that time that song was out anyway.
I don't know if it's as good as Macklemore throwing a cookie into the upper deck when I was there. But
stop going on about that gig. Seriously,
man. You weren't there.
It's over.
You weren't there.
It's your Woodstock.
Okay, so...
That was Craig on Kanye.
That was Craig on Kanye. Thanks, Richard, for your special correspondence. Shall we go into songs of the week, Craig?
Yes, let's do it.
Where are we starting?
Number two.
Oh, shit. We're doing the numbers game again?
Don't we always? Is that not what a thing?
It's your call.
This is Eminem.
Jumped out of the second floor of a record store with a treacherous four cassette and a cassette recorder in Ecuador with Edward Norton. Witnessed the metamorphosis of a legend growing like an expert swordsman from the Hessian War, and hence the origin of the Headless Horseman. Born with the endorphins of a pathetic orphan. Endless source and reservoir of extension cords and dresser drawers and dead bolts on the bedroom doors and sexual torture kits kept in a separate storage bin. Excellent boyfriend. Use intercourse to settle scores with women who have vendettas towards men.
Dickhead. Thanks, Craig. I appreciate you taking the ring general spot there. Eminem, campaign speech. That sounds like a protest song, is it?
It's an Eminem song.
Is it a song, though?
No, not really. It's Eminem.
Does this qualify as a song? I want Dean to go first because Richard has been primed and ready.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah. The
coiled spring.
There's a coil spring in the corner here. So, Dean, please take it away.
I will add that these guys have been mining me for my opinions to pass them off on their own all week in the league.
It's true.
I enjoyed this, and it's nice. It's got no replay value because it's
horrible.
It's really long with no real melody or no real structure. But you know, it's been something like 15 years of Eminem rapping over the same click beat. Always incredibly technically proficient, but without any real heart in any of his rhymes. Even Dr. Dre couldn't resurrect him on his album last year. His verses were pretty much what we expected. So it's nice to actually hear him do something that's a little bit different, that has, I think, a little bit of value to it. As I say, I'm not about going to go, it's not going to be on any sort of playlist. You're not going to want to listen to it in any sort of regularity. But it's nice to hear him actually do something and sound, you know, like he has a real harpy for once, because it's been something like 16 years since I've heard him do anything of worth.
I'm going to stop you there, Richard.
I was and I'm going to
say that I think it does have replay value, not an excessive not an excessive amount, but in as much as replay value is what brought me to actually some of the merits that Dean was positing there. Look, you know, this is throwaway. It's abrasive. When I first got the link, I was like, is this one of those not real links where someone has pitch shifted the vocals to not get it taken down? Because he sounds a bit sped up or a bit kind of chipmunked or something. And obviously the arrangement, if you can call it even that, is as minimalist as it gets. But I didn't have any issues with it. I thought it was, you know, it was as a scattershot thing. I was like, fine, grand, cool. If it's on the album itself, well then, fair enough, that's questionable. Craig Fitzpatrick. No,
I won't stand for this. It's just more of the same, just awful, awful Eminem trash that he's been doing. I probably culminated with Rap God, where he was just aiming to get as many syllables to rhyme, and he's just become a slave to the internal rhyme. And it's at a point where
people
he's talking...
love Rap God, though. People love that song.
But it's so ridiculous, and it's as far from like hip-hop as you can get in terms of it's just... I don't know. It's like, he's amazingly talented. Someone needs to take his notepad off him, though, and just get him to write a song. Up with a song.
This was the most bored I've ever been listening to hip-hop in my life.
Oh, I thought you were going to say...
About 3.5 minutes
in. Show, because we haven't gotten the Kings of Leon's album.
This is the fucking dumbest thing I've ever heard
it's
in my
ridiculous.
Life.
It's ridiculous.
It is. The man swallowed a thesaurus and shat fucking rhymes.
He's like a and genius algorithm that's like, just gotten out of control.
I remember what hip-hop's about. It's about rhyming stuff. And I'm going to fucking rhyme. And he's like, the whole thing about Eminem back in the day was shock value was a lot of it. He was really good. His first couple of albums were they were of their time. Marshall Mathers LP is a classic. Everybody, you know, recognizes that. But whatever's happened to him since, and even, you know, even over the last couple of years, even Marshall Mathers LP 2, which I had high hopes for, because Rick Rubin was obviously behind that. This is just, he has descended into this thing where just anything which vaguely rhymes, and they're so basic.
Yeah.
Like people will say, oh, he's so technical, look how fast he's rapping and stuff. There's nothing vaguely lyrical about any of this. And I mean, the strongest he could come out with, because he goes on Donald Trump, and you know, what does he call him? He calls him a loose cannon. A fucking loose cannon. Who's blunt with his hand on the button. It's just fucking crap. And I mean, the closest thing to shock value he does in this is where he talks with George Zimmerman, who, of course, you know, was the guy who shot and killed Trayvon Martin. He says about, you know, putting him in 4-inch heels and ditching him at, you know, Trayvon Martin's dad's doorstep. Like, I think Eminem is so behind the curve. All of these issues are so dealt with by people who are much more, you know, lyrically able to talk on the subject matter, as well as, you know, are pushing the art form out there as well. Eminem's is like,
it seems almost quaint, doesn't it, when he tries to be edgy now? You're just like, oh, go for it, Eminem.
Pathetic.
Use the word faggot, you know.
It's a bit like, yeah. Misogyny is back in all this crap as well. There's no artistic value to it.
Now he does rhyme misogynistic with massaging this dick, which if no one else has done before in rap is just outstanding.
Well, it brings to mind.
I agree with everything you are saying up until kind of this song, because yeah, everything since the Eminem, what was the third
Eminem
one?
Show?
The Eminem show, and including that album, was all incredible, like stainless steel beats, as you say, just, you know, rapping syllables on syllables on syllables, very, very proficiently, but without any real kind of soul to it. And I mean, he's admitted things like he was jealous. He considered dissing Lil Wayne because he was jealous of how successful he was being, and things like that. This actually seems like something that he did because he actually had a feeling like he wanted to do this.
He does at least sound engaged.
It's not fantastic. If this was a new artist, I would have.
This would be the most, like, yeah. Nobody There's would no way even take any notice of this crap.
This wouldn't get covered on this show if this was a new artist. But it is a little bit refreshing to actually hear Eminem do something that's a little bit different.
Do you know what he should have done? Because remember there was these rumors like a month ago that he was going to have a diss track against Drake. That would have been perfect. It would have completely just validated it. At least it would have been like, you know, it would have revitalized himself, you know, it would have made him relevant in some way. But Drake would take shots back because Drake is just a very.
I don't think anybody wants those kind of cross generation disses. Nobody wants Eminem to come back.
Budden is doing it. He was the precursor to Drake, I suppose, in many ways. But I just don't feel like nobody gives a shit what Eminem thinks of Donald
Trump. Well, this thing, it's like, you know, ability versus, you know, kind of insight. And I think, you know, it brings to mind on Craig's record of the year last year was Compton by Dr. Dre. Mm. Eminem stuck out on that like a sore thumb because he was being overshadowed by everybody else involved. And also because he had dud lines and really led
weights. It started off really well and then it fell apart.
He had a line where he said, he goes, I make even the bitches I rape come.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like, why is that there? Why are you going?
Because he's Eminem. Like, it wasn't even. I didn't really see the argument around that.
But I think. Yeah, but see, this thing. But I think
the fact that nobody picked up on that was because it was like, oh, who cares? He's not relevant. His ability is incredible, and like it genuinely is. Like the things he can do, like, you know, it's like a machine gun. It's like it's ridiculous. But in terms of what he's saying, like it's so old hat. It's so done. It's so of its time. It's so. I mean, like, yeah. I like his cadence, but the actual words, man, I mean, I don't know.
I don't think it's even pleasant to listen to.
No, there's no flow to speak of.
Impressive, but like, I mean, Bus Driver and people like that rap fast and stuff, and nobody listens to Bus Driver.
No, seriously, he needs his notepad taken away so he can't just link all these words together.
What's the story with that beat? I mean, it does sound like a dead vacuum cleaner.
It feels like someone was in the background, like, you know, just pressing down a button on a fucking Korg. And I don't know. Does it bode well for an album? Do we care about the album? It's Eminem. It's an 8-minute Eminem minimalist beat.
Let's care about the feature because I'm sure you'll have, I don't know, probably Kendrick and other people throwing.
And I don't think it suggests, like, it's, you know, this is probably just a once-off. I don't think we learn anything about what's going to come from a record from it. So it's just a kind of throwaway thing.
We'll get a Rihanna pop smash as well. That'd be good. That might make it worthwhile.
Rihanna pop smash. Fantastic. Somebody who I would like to hear on an Eminem album, trying to say that together, and I don't know if we will be Ab Soul, who I think has done a better job with, you know, kind of political and societal minded stuff this week with Huey New, which sounds like this. They speak highly of me when I raise my voice. I gotta shoot a fucking free throw to make my point. My wittiness leave them stuck in the wilderness. You'll need a backwood to roll to this joint. I'm Robin Hood and Robin Jeans. You follow me? Never mind, I'm tired of tight analogies. Still in pursuit of happiness in the midst of the madness. With middle fingers to bitches with badges that go boink. I'm on the fence with common sense. My logic is at 5 9 0 7 4 6. No shit, Sherlock. Reminder, my high solo on a battle. So that's Ab Soul there, surveying the current state of race relations through the gaze of an influential political activist in the Top Dog Rapper's new video for Huey New. Can you tell I didn't write that intro and I'm reading it off someone else's? This is significantly better. Am I right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Where's the code that's saying?
Yeah. It's one of the best rappers of all time.
Yeah, it might shock you guys. Absol's done a better job in half the time.
We're right off that amazing Absol feature on Danny Brown's Really Though, which is just outstanding
such a
track.
Great song.
Kendrick as well, and Earl. And this is great. This is really interesting. I just like his flow. His reference as well always work for me. He's a really fresh rapper that, I don't know, I just kind of really vibe with. But his last record these days didn't quite work for me. So this definitely kind of bodes better than that. He seemed to be, I don't know if it was a little too try-hard. He was trying to do too much. He was trying to make a major push, it seemed. It certainly wasn't in the same league as something like Control System. But no, this is definitely on the right track. And love the Fresh Prince reference as well to start.
I love that. Yeah, that's excellent.
It was, yeah.
Puts you in a good mood straight away. And then gives you... Nice. And then gives you a, you know, song to kind of to think about. So, yeah, I think that, like, that might be, like, that kind of sense of humor. That kind of, you know, wryness, which is definitely absent from Eminem when he's just trying to fucking sledgehammer you.
Yeah.
I have so much time for this track. I love everything about it.
It's quite good. I think, yeah, I'm encouraged, like Craig is, by this, because I'm like, of the whole TDE Top Dog sort of, you know, click or whatever grouping, you know, he's probably the one who's had the least amount of sort of commercial success. He's probably the least recognized of the whole bunch of the originals anyway. And
Kippy.
Yeah. I just feel like, you know, he's
the group
he's,
Black Hippie.
Yeah, Black Hippie. That's of course, yeah, if you want to go in the group. I just feel like he's been waiting for something like this, because he's got a lot of he's super talented. He's super talented as a rapper, and it's just never really clicked for him cohesively in terms of an album. I've never really liked many of his full length projects so far. So hopefully this pulls it out. I don't want to say it's a soft target. It's a frequently hit target, the whole Donald Trump and race relations thing. I mean, the best, if you're going to go for the best Donald Trumpy sort of thing so far, it's still YG's Fuck Donald Trump. Like,
straight into the point.
It's so basic, but it's just so brilliant.
Dean, would you prefer if, I guess, not just necessarily hip-hop, but like other kind of aspects of music were getting not on this protest train? Because I personally, when I see has written protest song, I always go, ugh, I mean, really? I just kind of feel like it's such a, I don't know. There's no mystery to it. There's no, like, I know what I'm getting, and it always feels quite throwaway.
It's about the execution, though, isn't it?
Well, yeah, for sure. But I mean, I don't know. Like, is it a waste of time?
Well, what are you saying? You don't want protest music?
I'm not saying I don't want protest music ever, but I feel like, you know, like there's a lot of kind
of. You want protest music banned, do you? Unless...
No. I want to protest against protest music. I mean,
typical
like
fascist town.
No, it's just like.
There should be a committee that, you know, selects the protest songs that they like and then
what
releases
you should
them.
Hear. Yeah.
This turnaround, I tell you. No, do you know, I find like some like a lot of it is like there's conviction here for sure, but not on, like the next track that we're going to play, I don't think has it at all. So I just kind of feel like it's very like it's not so much hard to gauge the barometer, but like it seems to be like it's the in thing. No,
certainly around this campaign.
We had Death Cab for Cutie last week, one of the worst songs I've ever heard in my
that
life.
That actually that worked for me. I thought that was really good. We're at loggerheads with that.
A week on, you're still telling this
I mean, line? I'm not still listening to it, but I thought it was well executed.
Okay, well, let's see. I kind of feel the same way about this next track, so. Why don't you lead it in, Craig, seeing as you're probably on the same page?
Okay, this is Elvi. Are these my jets?
Wonder what I'm gonna do today. Are these my jets? I like to mix ladies' drinks with my fingers. Are these my jets? Seems like every day somebody from college comes by to tell me his life is in ruins. I like to tell him my stories from college and how I was so lonely. I was rocking back and forth.
And we're back. Dave, do you like this song?
No, I don't.
Tell us why.
Elvi, I haven't really gone to the Elvi well yet, and this just feels...
Once you do, though, Dave.
This just feels like nothing. I mean, like... Matt Berninger, The National, I love The National. I've kind of, you know, seen them too many times, and I feel like they're maybe a spent force. I mean, like, they're definitely kind of not as good as they used to be. This is a side project, and this song, which comes with a weird kind of side-scrolling platform game, which has political, you know, rhetoric attached to it. The quote that accompanies this is Matt Berninger says, "This is a song about walrus penis jewelry, which is a real thing. My sister Rachel was given some by a Canadian bush pilot when she worked for Alaska Airlines in the 90s. With regard to the game, who cares? You know, they wanted a cathartic interactive experience, and they wanted to
that's
shoot."
The video, that's the game, that's
yeah,
in the video.
But like, the song, I mean, the whole thing, it just, even people I know who love Matt Berninger and everything he's done are like, what the fuck is this?
I mean, it's a bit left field. I kind of dug
didn't
it though.
Hate yeah. it. Oh, God. I didn't hate it. I mean, it is a throwaway track.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, it's clearly something they didn't spend more than 2 hours on.
See, this is my problem with like a lot of protest songs. I mean, like
it's
okay,
a bit
look,
gimmicky. It's a bit gimmicky.
That's the word I was struggling and failing to find. I
mean, there's like, some funny lines in it though.
In a year where Anani's album comes out, Hopelessness, and that's a protest album. That's a fantastic piece of work. I'm all for protest music if it actually is about something. But this just feels like, oh, we'll get Elvi. They'll
that's
do
so,
it.
That's so broad. You know, you could say that about music. I'm all for the music that I like. I'm all for those protest songs that
this
I enjoy.
Crap.
No, I don't think so. I really
oh,
feel...
Oh, well, hold on.
No, but I just feel like there's a lot of bandwagon hopping, no? Like, I mean, okay, maybe I'm wrong, but like...
It's something people feel passionately about. Yeah.
Maybe I'm correlating specifically to this American election in particular, because it just feels like overkill to me. Look, I ain't saying don't fucking write songs about shit that you have problems with. Of course not. I mean, like, I probably put myself across in the wrong way. I think it's just
you
like...
You know what, like, actually? I think the point on some of these songs is that they just talk about, oh, I hate Donald Trump. And they don't really explain why.
You just cited Fuck Donald Trump by YG.
I know, yeah.
And the thing you liked about it was that the punchiness
of
the chorus.
It was simplistic in the chorus, but...
I think YG does lay out pretty good
he does.
Argument as to why we shouldn't like Donald Trump.
To some degree, a lot of it, especially this, what is it, the 30 Days, 30 Artists thing.
Yes, yes.
A lot of it, like, they're all, I mean, I don't even, they're all, like, completely throwaway, and there's nothing really, there's no depth to them. In terms of like, you know, what are we angry about?
Yeah, that's,
that guy. We
that's
don't like
my
that
problem.
Guy.
It feels homogenous. Like,
no,
it,
I don't doubt these people dislike Donald Trump and see a value to putting that into a song.
Yeah, and Matt Berry, like the National, of course, political enough themselves. That Mr. November was originally used as a campaign song for Barack Obama, and it's a fucking belter,
an absolute belter. Yeah, incredible song.
It's just a classic. So yeah, maybe a little disappointed that this isn't Mr. November 2, Mrs. November or something. Hey,
Mr. November Junior. Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, well, let's talk about someone who Dean knows quite well.
a terrible
Elvoy song that I want out of my life. Dean, the cover of Totally Dublin magazine quite recently featured an interview that you did with Reggie Snow.
Oh, I was wondering, where's this segueing into? Yes, I interviewed him. I don't know him any more intimately than that.
Well, I feel like, you know, like, it was a very good piece, and he's kind of blowing up right now. So for anyone who listens to No Encore who's not familiar with Reggie Snow, what should they know?
Oh, yeah. Go back and read the piece and everything.
Yeah, catch up, people.
Good news agents.
Go on to Dean's Contently website and check it out there. But
So Reggie Snow emerged about 5 years ago under the name Lex Luthor. His real name, the Lex part comes from the fact that his name is Alex, which he prefers to be known as. But also at the time, I think there was a producer called Lex Luger. It's very confusing. But yeah, he's kind of spent the last 5 years kind of just traversing the earth. He was in a couple of different schools in the US, and his official address now is in London. He's from Drumcondra. But you know, he's been doing a lot of things, bar really releasing a whole lot of music. He's got not that many songs. His kind of most fully functioning release he ever made was like a 5-track EP. So I think there's some label issues at the moment where he's building towards an album, but we've gotten two tracks in the last couple of weeks that are kind of teasing out this album.
Well, let's have a listen to one of those tracks. This is Pink People.
Greatest actors, me, I kept a humble me, I did it, this my greatest chapter, written here where bodies lay, mummified and on display, Zulu with the shackles free and weapons be the up and keep, you gon' make me catch a body like them fucking rappers do, or you gon' make me have to make a record about fucking you, or you gon' make me have to have these gold teeth and tattoos, you gon' make me have to crash Mercedes, so I'm begging you, shot the ball and laid it up in, purple fluid in my cup in, broken dreams and wet dreams, there's alcohol inside my gut, all you say is fuck me better, chicken grease up on my sweater.
So that's one of the tracks, Dean.
Yeah, so it's I'm happy that this is the kind of sound he's going for. He's going for that kind of, you know, more I guess you could say jazzy organic sound. He did a track a while ago with Future that kind of really, you know, hard trap drug music, which he was totally proficient on. But I think this is the stuff he's always gravitated towards. He's got a tattoo of MF Doom on his leg. Those are the kind of beats he should be jumping on. That's what his voice works for. So yeah, I mean, you know, Pink Beetle. I probably preferred the track before it that he put out, Drugs. But I think it's all building towards what should be a pretty exciting debut album.
Yeah, and like, he's got that kind of clout. You mentioned Future. I know Sky Ferreira is a fan. Annie Mac. Like it seems like he's totally like not leaving Drumcondra behind or anything.
Yeah, apparently when on Endless, when Frank Ocean.
I still want to slag off Drumcondra, yeah, man.
Frank Ocean name drops him on Endless. He says, you know, Reggie, and apparently he's the Reggie because they know each other. But yeah, he has the contact list.
Yeah, like it's weird because he's still in his early 20s, right? Mm-hmm. And almost at this point, he's like Ireland's most successful ever rapper, really, or certainly the kind of, there is this huge weight of expectation that he will come good and kind of bring it into the global mainstream, really, isn't there?
I don't know if he ever will. Like, I mean, he's a hugely talented rapper, but I just don't know if he'll ever make that proper breakthrough. I mean, as you say, he has the contacts list, and I mean, anybody who was at Electric Picnic and saw himself and Joey Badass cutting it up in other voices will be like, man, this guy has it. Like, but I just don't know. I'd love to see him make a step up, but I just don't know if that's ever going to happen. You know?
Yeah.
No, I think he has the ability. I mean, you go back to his earliest recordings. There, like the you know, he was rapping with the same kind of like technical proficiency as Earl Sweatshirt. That was what he was
that's the comparison
to.
I always kind of make. That's why I sort of see him as sort of like almost like, I don't know, yeah, I think they appear or just as like,
yeah, that kind of laid back level. And yeah,
they
yeah.
started in a very similar place, but I think Earl has gone much more like a much more darker sound, and I guess you could almost see Reggie as being, you know, the almost the good angel to the bad angel or to the devil angel or whatever that Earl is. It's just, yeah, he, I mean, you know, there's something there's a talent there that's pulling people towards him. I think part of these label issues that he's having is because he's operating at a really high level where these commercial concerns are with people. Apparently he's like submitted albums and they've sent them back and said, there's no singles here. It's that time old problem.
Mm.
But, I mean, you know, so he's still very young. He's been around for a long time. He's playing a long game. He's not a kind of a young thug kind of esque artist who can go into the studio and come out 6 hours later with four different songs. He likes fully functioning songs. He likes to put out concepts. So it's just his work ethic is slower, but that's only by today's rap standards.
Mm. Yeah.
But these songs, I think, are showing that he's moving towards, he's embracing what the things that make him good, and hopefully that should be drawn out onto a whole record.
There's certainly a lot of promise on this. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
He sounds, you know, his usual effortless self, really, just laid back, and I think the beat complements that. I wouldn't be too crazy on the track as a whole. I mean, I like the vocal hook, but underneath it... It feels a bit stale to me or something like that. I'm just not hugely crazy about it, apart from his performance, which is the main thing, I guess.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think, you know, production-wise, it's a little bit bedroom for me, but I do like his conviction and I want to hear more from him. So I hope that he kind of manages to marry the two, I guess, on this album if it does come out and if it does prove a launching pad for him. From someone who's kind of, you know, starting out and trying to figure it all out to someone whose career, unfortunately, is... Craig is shaking his head at me.
He's dead. It's a very Partridge segue.
Trying
here.
To dance around it.
Jesus. Was that really Partridge?
It was a bit. Accidental Partridge? Fuck. David Bowie, who passed away in January of this year, before, like shortly after releasing Black Star, another album of the year contender.
It's not, though, is it?
Well, it's contender. I feel like it's a contender. I feel like people are definitely going to have it up there, and it was up for the Mercury and... It's going to be a lot of top tens, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's a great album.
I would agree with you that it's not the album of the year, for sure, but it is very good. And yeah, Killing a Little Time is the third track we've been given of these supposedly last ever recordings, part of the Lazarus Sessions. And
yeah, they were part of the Black Star Sessions, and they're now going to be bundled into this kind of Lazarus, I guess, cast recordings.
Well, let's have a quick listen. Let's have a listen to Killing a Little Time, which is quite the rocker, I would say. Sounds like this. I'm choking, man. I'm fading, man. Just killing a little time. I love the sound. So there you go, Craig. You think it's the best of the bunch, do you?
Well, they're so different that it's really tough to pick between them. This was the one that certainly grabbed me straight away. I think it's terrific. I think all three songs are very, very strong, and he was in a real purple patch right up until the end. This has those jazz influences, but it's just a really straight-ahead rocker. It has that kind of harder sound that you might have got on something like Outside. It's going a little bit back. What do you guys think?
I'd say it's the best of those three. the other two, I don't know, didn't really grab me. This one is, yeah, a bit of a belter, all right. Yeah, not a huge amount to really add to it. I mean, it does feel like, I mean, I just wonder where I would slot it into Black Star if you were to put it in there. Yeah. It doesn't really, I don't know.
If it doesn't fit, no. Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah. It actually reminds me of, like, an audible maybe, but like it reminds me of the Rolling Stones comeback single from a few years ago, Doom and Gloom.
Great song.
Yeah. Which I think is an excellent song, yeah. And I feel like the Rolling Stones, they just brought out a song before we came to record the pod, so I haven't heard that one yet. You know, results may vary with them, but that one's a belter. And I like the immediacy of this. I do think the problem, though, is that it's going to be exceptionally hard to judge anything of an artist of this magnitude in the wake of their death.
Yeah, it's very much wrapped up in all of that.
Same. Yeah, I think there's a risk, though, we were kind of speaking about this going on end of Lyrius and saying you're kind of saying, really? And, you know, but I think there is maybe a risk of now that the hype around the album is crushing actually how good an album is, because this I think it's certainly Bowie's best album since Heathen anyway, and probably better than that. And I was a big on Heathen.
Yeah.
So I think that this song is definitely in line. I can hear it slotting onto that album.
Really?
I mean, it's got the saxophone in it, you know, that I think kind of ties a lot of that record together. I don't think that's an album that's either particularly, you know, sonically, it moves and shifts into a lot of different places anyway.
I think it's more the speed of it, though. Like, it comes racing out the blocks. I mean, like that's a great thing, but I'm just wondering, like, how would you, like if you were to put it in there, like, would you be like, oh, you should open the record with this? Or, like, it's a tough one.
Maybe we shouldn't go into sequencing of the record.
No, let's
be
do
here
it.
All night.
Let's like, do yeah. it.
Line them up.
Let's fix Bowie's last record.
Look, I'm all for that.
Sorry, Dave.
I just think it'd be very, very difficult within the kind of, you know, the build of it. Because I find that album quite difficult to return to, and not because of Bowie's death, but because I think it's kind of an exhaustive listen.
Yeah, but even more so than let's say the resequencing. You know, you often get with a lot of these kind of cooked tracks that they sound certainly like they were cut during the same sessions, but they were left off the album for a reason. Mm. Not necessarily to do with, you know, quality. So I think this kind of maybe could be one of those classic examples of that.
I'd be really surprised if it's the last David Bowie.
This is the thing, yeah. Like that to me, really that's surprised. Like a wrestler retiring. Like it's, yeah. I'm kind of like, there'll be more. They're coming.
There's a
back.
Lot more. Yeah.
He'll be back.
Yeah. Fucking Goldberg.
He's still alive.
Goldberg
probably.
Just popped up in WWE. You know, he's back after 12 years. He's also still alive.
Rocking the grey beard, yeah.
Last X-Men I was reading, Charles Xavier was dead. You know he's coming back to resurrected Jean Grey several times.
You've not seen the last of me.
He's in the trailer for that new the new Wolverine movie. Logan.
Oh yeah, this kind of looks a little bit like Old Man Logan, which
it
is
looks like
successful.
Blood Father, which was the Mel Gibson movie that just came out, and also
ooh,
it has
Blood Father. Now you're talking.
You see that movie?
That's excellent.
Do you like it?
Oh, so good, man. So good. Like,
boom.
You know, Mel Gibson. I don't know if it's because
did high five.
I don't know if it's because nobody will. They'll still let him make these massive Oscar
bumped
bait
into
movies.
Him in town.
Yeah.
Literally bumped into.
Did you say hello?
No,
does he look like a chewed up old shoe like he does in this? Like
he's
a grizzly old
grizzly,
fuck?
Yeah.
He's wearing a red hat. It was like Steve Zissoulak, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Literally just bumped into him outside Trinity. I was like, wait a minute. That is quite
very
was.
Problematic.
I think
Steve
he's yeah. shown just kind of he's such a horrible human being that they won't cast in anything anymore. So now he's making these like really gritty as fuck movies like Edge of Darkness. And
yeah,
I didn't see
that's the way to do it.
I didn't see Get the Gringo, but man, he's like reborn as
Bloodfather
as
is
Lee
a
Marvin
grindhouse movie. And like yeah, well, like whatever about Mel Gibson's so personal traits, his screen presence.
Oh, and it's so good. Like you think you
can't deny it.
You get Mel Gibson who you know, looks like yeah, his face is just ridiculous. He's the most grisly bastard you've ever seen. You think no, we'll double down on the grisliness. Get Michael Parks in a supporting role
and William H. Macy's there as well. Why not?
Wow,
bring in all the leather.
That movie's so good.
But yeah, I don't know. Mel Gibson, interesting guy. It kind of made me wish he had been Mad Max in Fury Road instead of Tom Hardy.
Ooh,
contentious.
I want a sequel to What Women Want. That was a classic.
What would you call it? What women have, what women don't want.
I could answer that well.
I think on some of the those recordings when he was asserting what he believed that women wanted him, and I think it turned out to be quite a disparity between that and reality. So
let's move on to the album.
I feel like that's enough of a tangent for this week.
Sorry, Colm.
Speaking of horrible things,
speaking of questionable and contentious relics from the past, it's time for Kings of Leon and their Walls. This is Waste a Moment, the lead single, which, as I posited in my own review of this record, might as well have been called lead single. Take the time to waste a moment. So that's Waste a Moment there. Did you guys feel that I made you waste some moments listening to this record? Or
no, I was going to listen to it anyway because that's just my duty as a former fan. Well, no, I'm still a bit of a fan. This is the best thing they've done in about 6 or 7 years. Which
the
is,
album.
Lead
yeah.
This charge.
Yeah.
I actually didn't hate it. Go on.
No, it's not. It's not contemptible. It's so weird. I mean, like, what started out as like them being the Southern Fried Strokes, these kind of weird backwards hillbilly type blokes that were just like really good at writing kind of Creedence Clearwater Revival songs.
B-sides, if you had any, perhaps, no?
No, some of their songs were better than Creedence and stuff.
If you will,
are you a big Creedence fan?
No.
Yeah. could you name 5 Creedence Clearwater?
Probably. Yeah. Probably. I think so. Yeah, okay. Gun to the head.
They're fairly popular.
If Mel Gibson put a gun to my head.
If you had to tell me that, like, whatever, 10 years later they were going to be the band that they are now, and as massive as they are now, I would have spat in your face because that was the kind of person I was 10 years ago. No, but this is just
Jesus.
Face spitting news.
Something you want to say here?
But we're at a point now where if they do anything that's like vaguely kind of interesting or that they seem kind of caught up in, we're kind of like, oh, maybe they're back on track. And yeah, as I say, these 10 tracks aren't all completely contemptible. There's some interesting stuff on this. I mean, Muchacho is pretty interesting in terms of it just being a bit of a weird, like, Hotline Bling,
well,
Timmy Thomas, Cha-Cha
The thing that it's using there is very reminiscent of a piece of music on the Fight Club soundtrack by the Dust Brothers, which I'm sure is also very reminiscent of what you've just mentioned and others. So it's kind of like, I'm not sure it has a place, though, in that song. Because that song starts off and you're kind of like, oh, that's different. And then it just becomes this country drawl. And it's like,
well,
okay,
it's actually quite a sweet song, I think. And it has some whistling, which works, which is, I think you should give a few points to
We've
the album.
We've got an
overall.
Apologist in the studio, guys.
Find Me is a great song.
Great, though.
Yeah, it's a great song.
I want the word great to be great again. Like America.
Like great
under Donald Trump.
Conversation Piece has an okay
melody. No.
It has an okay melody.
I'm stopping you. I'm pulling you up.
No, you're not. Over could be Joy Division if it wasn't for the terrible vocals and
what's
the awful
God?
Lyrics.
What's happening?
I follow Craig on most of it, but I didn't really hate this album. I thought I would really hate it, whereas it's just a bit like vanilla.
It's interesting. Around the World has a bit of a bounce to it. And the rest isn't great. But overall, their best effort in a good few years.
I don't know what to say.
Well done, lads. Yeah. Well done.
Dean, please.
Let's come back to reality. The Kings of Leon were always awful.
They were. I'm walking out of the studio.
Can we high five again, please?
Yes, please.
Done.
You never would have heard about this band if it wasn't for the Strokes. They rode the Strokes' coattails. But their best album, which is what, like Aha, Shake, Heartbreak, whatever.
Probably.
That has less value than that new Strokes EP. That's less value than Angles. That's how I think.
That's a fantastic record. The first three actually were great.
Oh, the third album with fucking On Call and that little Pixies knockoff Charmer on it. Oh my God, that was so
pure
terrible.
Shit, in fairness,
But this okay. I'll be honest. I was supposed to listen to this album for today. I only got halfway through it because I got so bored. So the second half could be fucking
gold,
Dark Side of the Moon or something. I don't know.
You checked out once they started sounding like Joy Division was around track.
But yeah, it's just so funny to me because like the last album, the only song I heard off it was, I think, Super Soaker, which was the biggest Strokes knockoff you could hear. This time, now they seem to have gone to go back again. They should have been one of those bands that just got thrown on the indie landfill from that era. Just, you know, kind of not offensively bad, just not that good.
I think
amazing moments.
I would have been a fan of their first two albums, I'd say.
The third is great.
But they were massively
Now, there's a couple
overrated.
Of duds on it, but there's some great songs on that third
They were
record.
Massively overrated by how big they became.
Somehow
like everybody decided it's just a really cool thing to just slam them now. But, like, I mean, just, like, I don't know. When they got commercially big, everybody's like, oh, I wish they were back to where they were when they were doing the first two albums, because they were amazing. And then that's how it became known that Kings of Leon used to be this amazing band. But
sure.
They never really were. But they were quite good. They were quite good.
No, I mean,
and now they're not.
They somehow managed to cross over into, like, this bigger realm, but they maintained a lot of their kind of indie cred. Like, a lot of people whose opinions that I would respect would like Kings of Leon. No, at this table. But
Craig likes them.
He doesn't respect my opinions, though.
But like, you'd swear they were fucking REM now.
There's no indie cred for Kings of Leon anymore at this point. We're about 10 years after the cred just going to run.
Okay, we'll just go into specifics anyway. Just for the songs they did listen to off, I just think the instrumentation is just so sloppy. Around the World, the guitar riff on that sounds like, it sounds like they're trying to nick a Vampire Weekend guitar riff, which themselves was kind of taken from Afrobeat. So it's almost got that kind of recording, only it's being played with, like, you know, garden gloves on your fingers.
I'd love to be at the brainstorm sessions when they came up with this album. Like, they had a big whiteboard and there was, like, more of this.
Yeah, you're right. I would say, as you call it, the song lead single. Like, where did you pinch this riff, guys? Or how did you form
the
this?
Guitar on this record is dreadful, I would say.
Okay.
Matthew, the cousin of the group, so the cousin, is always to blame. Yeah, no, he's just like phoning it in so much. It's the same reverb drenched, just kind of dross for most of it, and just some of the songs can withstand it, but overall, just when you get to the end, you're just like, this guy's got, it doesn't have an idea how to string together a decent fucking guitar riff.
Can we talk about the album cover?
Amazing.
okay, who can best describe it for audio purposes?
Four porcelain dolls floating. They're just their faces in a pool of semen.
That's what it is. You did a good job there. Yeah,
it is. That's just, I could have been wittier.
WALS, the acronym stands for We Are All Like Love Songs.
Bollocks. In a way we are.
What the fuck is that?
This is another major problem with them.
We are all like love songs. That's Bollocks. What the acronym means.
Like when,
but there's two A's in
that. I know, like love, but not in the actual title. Sorry, Craig, go on.
This is the problem. This is down. Another problem here. Which Caleb has decided to go from like incoherent and kind of mysterious to like just banal as fuck and trying for these kind of universal, you know, sentiments that just are aiming for stadiums and arenas. And will, you know, probably reach.
I want to read out a quote.
He's constantly undermining any of the good melodies.
I want to read out a quote. They're on the cover of Hot Press magazine at the moment.
This is an awful quote. This is a really boring quote, though.
Yeah, but what? But the point, it's a lead quote in the piece.
Yeah, but okay.
Which shows you what the journalist was up against, or whatever mood the fucking lads are in. So he got the drummer, Nathan, who said, going into this record, I think we made it a point to not put any pressure on ourselves. I really don't feel any pressure. It's our last record on a record deal for one. So I think not so much pressure, I think the unknown. What's going to happen beyond? And can we make a good seventh album? This being the seventh album. That's kind of the only pressure we put ourselves under. We've kind of established ourselves on every other aspect. So yeah, I think our fans will be happy. Like, that is an incredible admission of not giving a shit.
What a man.
It's just someone that's terrible in an interview, like. No?
No, I think it's him going, like,
I don't think there's anything you can glean from
that. It's our last one on this deal. It's like, you know, we don't give a fuck.
No, I'm not trying to rinse them because it's cool to do so.
Mm.
You know, although, generally, I don't think about Kings of Leon most of the time, except I was just made to remember all about them for this podcast.
It
feeds into, you know, what we spoke about on here once before about guitar music just being about as bad as it's ever been at the moment, and that's why I think in this era, Kings of Leon, that's that lane that they're in is REM, and I'm not like a massive REM. I don't listen to REM very often for kind of just to listen to them, but you know, I appreciate REM. Did a lot of great things. Have a lot of talent. That this is the kind of band that fills that space.
I think on our landscape. No, they very much don't. They fill like a Bon Jovi space.
I don't think anyone's
saying these are REM. REM are one of the greatest bands of all time.
Thank you. Bon Jovi is
legal letters flying in from New Jersey.
Bon Jovi we firmly consider to be middle of the road, you know, populist stuff that, you know, nobody actually listens to, but everybody kind of listens to. The Kings of Leon are a band that started off very much like a kind of a garage rock band that you know earned a lot of indie credit. I always thought they were average, even the first couple of albums. Who managed to somehow cross over into this kind of bigger realm of popularity.
Stadium band.
You know, they did those, you know, the songs. Oh, that what's Use Me.
Use Somebody, Sex on Fire.
But they crossed over with Sex on Fire, not Losing My Religion. I don't see the comparison. Like,
but they kind of straddle those two lines still in a kind of a similar way that REM do or did. So that's why maybe I'm being particularly harsh on them. Again, we were saying the same thing about Eminem. This was a new record. It just wouldn't appear on the radar at all for me.
I don't know. I think it probably, because there's such a dearth of decent guitar music at the minute, maybe it might have registered in some ways.
Like, I'd agree with Dean on this one. I think they're so established at this point. People have decided that they're either fans or that they're not, and they happen to have a lot of them. And Kingsley and I were kind of one of those.
I don't know how I feel.
But I mean, a fan of, you know, like their kind of game of two halves thing. And it's like, you know, we're very much entrenched in the second part of their career, which happens to be extending by more years than it should. They worked with a producer by the name of Marcus Drabs on this record. Nathan Follow was at pains to suggest that he was very ruthless in the studio, put them under a lot of pressure. Implied a lot of restraint. I'm not hearing it. What I am hearing are his credentials. He accounts Mumford & Sons, Arcade Fire and Coldplay amongst his clients, and it's that kind of sound. It's that kind of, like, this will be grand in the stadium, this will fill an arena, fans will have a good night out, they can slur the words back to Caleb, it's fine. This record is neither a train wreck or anything to celebrate. It's so in the middle that it's genuinely, you know, objectionable in that regard, but ultimately I couldn't get hit up about it one way or the other. I gave it 4 out of 10 on Drowning Sound. I'm giving it a 4 out of 10 right now. Where do you guys stand?
Well, you're right in kind of saying about is this still Kingsley's middle period? You think in bands, you know, they slot into, you know, the various periods of the career. It just feels like ever since the third album, they've just been flopping back and forth between the two sounds, and they haven't really, you know, gone anywhere with their styles, bar straddling between, well, we kind of want to be a kind of a gritty, dirty garage rock band, or we want to be a stadium filling band. So it's kind of confusing, and you kind of think, where does an album like this fit in their legacy? Where will this be remembered? What will this be remembered as being the stage of their career? And it's just kind of a nothing release. From what I heard, I can't give it a rating because I did only listen to a half, but I'm going to give it a.
Go on.
3.
Okay. That's a 6 because you only listen half of it.
I thought we were going to get our first ever no rating.
How are you figuring that one, Matt?
Really, like, damn it.
Craig, we'll come to you last on this one because I feel like you should get the last word because I think you've been beaten down. Rich?
I go 5 because it is just
middle.
It's middle. It's nothing of any interest, really. But yeah, it'd be very easy to just say 2, 3, 4.
Craig,
so 5.
I'm going to go with an 8, but I'll probably give it a 6 because I think it is good and there's moments where I'm still hopeful. I think they could pull something out of the bag one of these decades.
Good Lord.
But no, there's some interesting things on this and I think they can still, I don't know, they can still pull it back.
Okay, well, we got one more album.
I'll give it a 6.
We got one more album to talk about this week, a new project. We played a track last week on the show. Let's remind you of what that sounds like. Yeah, check it out. I left home at 17, had to lighten the load. I was young, but I was keen to survive on my own. In the fall, got a gig with my brother-in-law, shopping work, bagging groceries, pushing in carts. I was grateful to be working, but say my back is hurting. I don't think it's the purpose. No, this can't be the call. At night, I'm working grave, just counting the time. On my break, I write a song about the love of my life. This ain't right. Couple dollars and change, walking home in the rain, jumping in front of the train. So that's Get Bigger by No Worries. The album is called Yes Lord, and it is out now.
Yes Lord!
I'm glad you did a better version of that than me. It is the combination of Anderson .Paak and Knowledge, and it's going down pretty well, right?
Yeah, very enjoyable. It's probably one of the albums of the year. Just put it out there.
Big statement.
It's top 10 for me already.
I feel like in this podcast, anything is either one of the albums of the year or other shit. There's no middle ground.
No grey areas here, man.
Album of the year. It's great, though. No, it is one of the albums of the year. Yeah, it's a really good listen.
I mean, you know, say straight off that everyone's saying like an R&B mad villainy, which it very much is. And obviously huge kind of reminders of Donuts and a lot of Dilla's work. And it's an interesting one because as great a year as, or year and a half as Anderson .Paak has been having, and he's again great on this, I think it's really Knowledge that seals the show a lot of the time. I mean, just some of these loops are just incredible, and the sampling is just so well chosen. He's drawing on like decades of great kind of funk, soul, 70s predominantly, but it's just such a kind of great mixtape of a kind of late night party vibe to it. I don't know, I just think it's great. It's really good.
Yeah, I'm right with you. I mean, like, my only kind of, I wouldn't go as far as I think it's one of the best albums of the year, simply because I think it's as easy to get into as it is to get out of. I found it very easy to walk away from this record. I think you could throw this
record
on.
Depends on if you're sitting down in a
nice warm bath. I think you can easily throw this record on at any track and kind of sync with it.
Mm. Also, it's shit.
I don't think it's much of an narrative. But then again, it's not meant to have that. That's fine. But for me personally, I was kind of like, I'm loving what they're doing. It's very enjoyable. It's not that indistinguishable or decipherable. It's kind of one long song. I know. It's the
worst
thing.
Think so. Man.
You don't think so?
It switches it up
like
so often.
It feels like patchwork moments, and that's fine.
Yeah, patchwork isn't one long song though.
Yeah, but like it's kind of all in the
patchwork
same.
By its very nature is kind of comprising of
together into one cohesive project, which is what you want from an album.
I'm sorry.
I'm still hurt over the Kings of Leon.
Yeah, apparently fucking so. Like, you know, step it up. But no, I really enjoy this. I think it's really good. I don't know how much longevity it's going to have, and I think I will return to it in the form of, you know, kind of picking my favorite cuts and putting them on a playlist. Is that a horrible thing?
So sequencing
to
again.
I think that's probably just about fair. Like, I don't think...
Thanks, Richard.
I don't think I'll listen to it in a year's time or 2 years' time, but that's by virtue of the fact that I think he's going to release, or Anderson .Paak is going to release shitloads more better stuff, and just he's just so prolific. It's a really good listen. I think Like This is one of my songs of the year. I can't stop playing that song. It's absolute it's just a jam.
Scared Money, by the way. Scared Money is insane.
Yeah,
when we hit that point in the album, I was just like, okay, this is the real deal.
What more can I say is great.
This is the album of the year.
Top 10 maybe.
I'd like to see Anderson .Paak now that he's had, as you say, a year and a half of doing really, really great things from you know, Dre's Compton all the way through his own release Malibu and this as well. I'd like to see him, you know, take it out. I want to see him tested. I want to see him outside of his comfort zone a little bit. It's a really, really good listen. That's pretty much all you can really say about it, though. Some of the tracks have been around for a good while. Like, I mean, Suede has been around in some shape or form.
Yeah, I believe Suede was the track that convinced Dre to kind of include him on Compton. He just played it 3 times. Like, okay, he's on the project, which is, you can understand. Dean, what do you reckon?
No, this is one of the albums of the year. I think
yay! I like Dean again.
I think it's got plenty of replay value, and you know that because once I finished my review, I haven't stopped listening to it, which is always the key gauge of that. I don't think it's something you can't kind of pick and choose too many tracks off, because there's so many kind of these you know, sonic donuts that you know, it just works better as a piece. The thing about with .Paak, who's definitely, you know, he's the artist of the year, like, I loved Malibu, but compared to this, like, Malibu was so conventional. He was doing a lot of songs, like, he got some Stevie Wonder's type songs on there. He never really rapped on it, anything. He kind of sang and everything. It was mostly, you know, chorus bridge, you know, very conventional. With this, I think Knowledge, what he does is he unlocks the best of .Paak, because .Paak has just got the most natural flow, you know, the most natural half sung, half rap.
Do you think it's better than Malibu then?
Yeah, I think this is better than Malibu.
It's like the pressure's off him and he can just enjoy the kind of sink into it a bit.
Not necessarily. I wouldn't say that there was ever a pressure on him, although Malibu was a much more personal work. Like, he was trying to lay a lot of things out there.
Mm.
But yeah, with this, it's because of the beat. It's got this kind of beat tape feel to it, where, you know, the music keeps shifting between these kind of different sounds. .Paak sounds just so natural on that. I mean, the way he kind of turns a phrase and tells a story on this is unique. It's incredible. He's got there's a song like Get Bigger, which is a song we heard, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, he tells this really simple tale about him working in a supermarket and, you know, at nighttime, kind of dreaming of making it big in music. But the way he does it and the natural rhythm to his voice and the natural, that conversational feel that he's speaking without thinking about it, is just so unique, I think, with anybody. I think you're right to say it's comparable to Mad Villainy, just because it's on Stone's Throw, and, you know, you obviously got the team up, and Knowledge is definitely in that Mad Lib lineage. It's not quite as good as...
Very dilly as well. He did remind me a lot of Donuts in some regards.
But, yeah, but I just love it as a companion piece, because to me, Mad Villainy is the ultimate... that's one of the best albums ever made in any genre. But that is the ultimate depiction of Doom, the supervillain. Whereas, you know, you take something like this, which is much more positive, and, you know, the first song, you know, Living, you think it's almost .Paak celebrating the year he's having, the career he's having. So it's great having that kind of brightness to it. It almost counteracts a little bit Mad Villainy's Darkness.
Their interview in The Fader at the moment sounds like it was very hard work for the journalist. I'm not sure if you've read it. And I saw the editor of Fact magazine.
I was just about to say this and you mentioned it. Incredible.
Al Horner on Twitter said that he once interviewed Knowledge and it wasn't a great time. And he said that he spent the entirety of the interview unwrapping and examining the Dreamcast that he just bought off eBay.
Well, you would be excited, wouldn't you?
To be fair, as Al Horner himself followed up, he goes, I don't blame him. Jet Set Radio was the shit.
Shenmue.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the interesting thing about Knowledge is he's clearly incredibly talented, but he also clearly just doesn't give a fuck. I mean, you know, you look at the mountains of music he's made. Something, what was it, 65 or 70 beat.
Do you reckon he's getting clearance for any of these samples, by the way? I'm just saying.
That's another thing I like about this, and I like about him as a producer. He'll go into, for Suede, that's the sample on that is The Bottle by Gil Scott Heron, his stuff, that's if you're want to be an old school hip-hop producer, his line, records yeah. are him, you got him, Isaac Hayes, these are records, these are the starting building blocks. Knowledge has no problem going into that, but he'll also cut up some Brazilian bossa nova shit. Interesting thing about him, he's released a bunch of music on All City Records over based out of Temple Bar as well. He's just a guy who just moves his own kind of rhythm.
He also hates EPs, which might be one reason why this album is 19 tracks long. He expresses disdain for EPs.
Yeah,
he said, don't come at me with this half-form shit.
And that's the funny thing, because their link up with Suede EP, which came out over a year ago, maybe just about a year ago, or if not a little bit less. I was still fucking with that up until this album came out. So a couple of tracks do make it, which is nice for completionists.
Even the kind of skits are actually quite funny.
They're good. Yeah, no, they are.
Which is rare for a rap album.
I do like this record. I haven't felt it to be like, you know, fucking
transformative anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's yet to fully grab me. I think it might, but like, I do think that you need to
let us know.
No, I think for me, I see an album like this and you play it on from the first play. You know, it's gorgeous on the ear, like the sound of the drums and like some of the kind of the basses that he mines from these old records are just so thick and grubby.
I say it a lot, but this is a headphones record for sure.
It is, yeah.
Oh, but you can play it. You can blast this.
Oh yeah, sure.
I'm gonna play it in the kitchen. Yeah. Making dinner with Greg Crack. It was really good.
What'd you have?
The best casserole I've ever made. Like,
it's just casserole making music.
Stirring up that shit. Yeah.
So for me,
put that in the back of the record pack, like, you know, it'd be great. Casserole music. This is casserole rap.
Enough. Dean, please rescue this.
Now there is that, you know, that from minute one, it's so enjoyable. But on repeat listens, you know, you listen to packs.
You're never coming. You're never. No. We're leaving it. You're never coming back, Dean. Sorry, please.
Sorry, Dean.
I don't know. What about that Lou Bega?
Did someone say Lou Bega?
Lou Bega.
Did someone say? Did someone say air horns?
We take scores, will we?
Let's take scores.
Cool.
7 out of 10 for me.
Jesus.
7.5 out of 10 for me.
Fuck off. I'm going back to every episode of this, and I'm going to comparatively to that.
You think it's better?
What albums have you given 8? What did you give for Hank Ocean? Like,
9.
You gave that a 9.
9. 8.6 on the episode, but then 9. Rounded up to a 9.
Okay, so you can do punctuations, can we?
You can do whatever you want.
So there we go. Let's decimize this shit.
I'll go 7.2 for this one. Because there's two of them. Ooh, I'm going, okay, 7.5. Fine, I'll go 7.5. It is clearly a very good record. I just haven't yet. I've yet to fully fall in love with it, okay?
Okay.
Right. Someone else talk now.
I'm going to give this album a 17 thumbs up and 4 Batman symbols.
Can we have the actual out of 10, please?
That's what I was going to go with.
Honestly.
Yeah, a
9.
9 out of 10.
Ooh.
All right.
Okay.
I go 8. Maybe not quite 8.5. Maybe an 8.3.
Okay. Pitchfork is 8.2, so you're in good company. And Craig.
Damn. Yeah, all the albums I really like that we talk about on this, I'm kind of about to say 9, but I'm like, it's approaching a 9. This is approaching a 9 for me. 8.8.
You've said approaching a 9 about 5 albums.
Well, no, 3, I think. James Blake, Bon Iver, and Frank Ocean. That's 4. Okay, 4. Make it 4.
You said approaching a 9 about Lost Under Heaven and about Anoni.
No, Lost Under Heaven was just an 8 for me.
Okay.
Anoni, I think I gave a 9, actually.
I think you gave it 9.
Sure. Okay.
I'll have to go back and check it all out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You gave. What did you give that Bon Iver album?
9.
Oh, you gave that Bon Iver album 9. You gave this a 7?
Yeah. Bon Iver album's amazing.
The Bon Iver album is amazing.
Very good.
It's a great listen.
No.
You're not a fan?
I listened to it, but it just didn't grab me, and I didn't come back to it.
Lemonade's still my album of the year.
All right, okay.
100% Lemonade's my album of the year.
Interesting. Didn't ask you that question, Pablo. But it's fine.
This has been Bonnie
Life of Pablo. Yeah. Same Pablo. Same. Anyway, look, time to wrap up this ramshackle as fuck episode.
Sure. But Casserole podcast.
It's been fun. I've enjoyed the podcast. I hope you've all enjoyed listening to Richard Chambers, because that's not happening again.
I'll be making my casserole podcast. I'm just going to listen to the podcast and just talk over it.
Stop saying podcast. Dean, thank you very much for coming in and bringing some semblance of decorum this week.
Bong bong bila, bong bong.
Craig, I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Cool. Yep. Thanks for everything. I appreciate it.
Thanks for all this.
It's and as always, we close No Encore with some Irish music. And this week it is a duo by the name of Alex and Emma, but their actual band name is Games Violet. The song is called Tin Box. They hail from Ireland, but are currently based in Philadelphia, where they write, perform, and produce music in their home studio. Their music has been described as hauntingly stylish and like Prince on robot ketamine, which I'm not sure is appropriate anymore.
Casserole ketamine.
Stop saying casserole. My name is Dave Hannery. This has been No Encore.
There will be no casserole.
There will be no encore. There will be no casserole. But there will be a track by Games Violet. Violet. Games Violet. Tin Box. See you next week, hopefully.
God, it was so beautiful. Have you seen my little tin box? I've never seen something so wireless. Smooth as baby Jesus. Oh yes, you please will sell us pleasure. Oh yes, you please will sell us pleasure. I've been running out of mirror. Now I'm feeling so reflective. Feeling so reflective. Feeling so reflective. Feeling so reflective. You must lock into it perfectly. It will velvet your interior.
HPN, the Headstuff Podcast Network. See headstuff.org for more details.
But if you like causing trouble up in hotel rooms...